Thank you, Brother Lenny, for those remarks. The floor is now open for comments and discussion of the first two chapters of Nehemiah. Don't be afraid to put your hand up. Brother Philip.
I'd like to start by thanking Brother Len for introducing our considerations on the Nehemiah this week. I think he's sort of like given us an appetite to consider these things, and there was a couple of points that really struck me in the things which Brother Len brought to our attention. The first was the fact of Nehemiah's character himself, which Brother Len developed quite well. And the second was the one point he mentioned was enthusiasm. I was trying to think as Brother Lenny was speaking, what must Jerusalem have looked like when Nehemiah came back? The chapters, chapter 2 in particular, tells us that, you know, the walls were burned down. It was an up. And it must have been really, really discouraging, as Brother Len said in his remarks. It must have been extremely discouraging to look at Jerusalem when he came back from a very orderly palace where everything was very clean and tidy to this absolute tip, this absolute dump of rubble and charred remains of what was the walls of Jerusalem. And it's really difficult to picture what a task lay in front of Nehemiah when he came to build those walls. And I was thinking actually when he was speaking as well, and I'm sure Brother David won't mind me saying this, my son Brother David, he bought a house some years ago, and it was badly in need of repair. And sometimes I would give David a hand, and I'd open the door, if you could open the door properly, of his house, and I'd look inside that house, and I'd think, where on earth do you start? The rubble would be everywhere. You'd be clambering over it. There'd be no even surfaces. And there would be just a huge amount of discouragement just looking into the front door before we'd actually gone in. But there's only one thing to do with that. And I think Brother Len ended that particular exhortation for us this morning. It's let us arise and build. And this matter of enthusiasm. And I think that's one of the things that we have the blessing this week around, is trying to enthuse one another in the great task of building. It's sometimes not easy, and I think, you know, when we turn and we try to think about the spiritual lessons of these things, sometimes we have ecclesial issues, sometimes we have family issues, and they come in all sorts of shapes and sizes, and sometimes you can sit down and think, you just feel like giving up maybe. But I think this is a particularly encouraging time for us to consider, let us arise and build. If Nehemiah had looked at that and had thought about the many problems that were before him, he might too have said, well, I might be better off going back to Persia and just sitting down in the palace there. But he basically had, as Brother Len said, a determination and an enthusiasm which was contagious. You know, there were people there at Jerusalem. You know, he was just one man. There were already a bunch of people that had already come back from the captivity. Why couldn't they get up and build that wall? Why couldn't they get that rubbish started to be removed? Sometimes it needs one individual to have that enthusiasm and that determination. And I think Nehemiah was that kind of character that could have that kind of enthusiasm that was contagious, that it helped others as well. And I think Brother Len has sort of like helped us in our start of our consideration in projecting Nehemiah's character so that we can sort of recharge the batteries, as it were, and get stimulated in the things of the truth so that we can arise and build as well.
Brother Burrow.
As Brother Philip mentioned, and then Brother Len mentioned that they talked. Brother Len spoke a little bit about the comparison between Ezra and Nehemiah, and Brother Philip talked a little bit about how people are different. Just to add a little to more to the comparison, Ezra and Nehemiah were very, very different people, and as we read the books, we can see the difference, and we can see the difference in their characters. And it's interesting to note that Nehemiah, that Ezra went out and started, and he worked very hard, and to the point that, as Brother Lenny pointed out, he was so frustrated he pulled his hair out, and eventually he left and went back, but the job wasn't done, wasn't completed. But he was a different type of a person than Nehemiah. And he was of a different character. Now, not that he didn't love God and not that he didn't try. He was a slightly different type of person, like we're all different. And along comes Nehemiah. Like Ezra, when he left, the king offered to send soldiers with him, and Nehemiah was ashamed to take him. Ezra was ashamed to take him. Well, Nehemiah, he took every help he could. He said, "Can you send me letters? Can you send letters to for the wood and letters for these people not to bother me and these letters to help get some help?" He took all the help. There's a difference between the two characters of the men, and Nehemiah finished the work that Ezra started. He succeeded. But the interesting point with the difference between the characters, the truly interesting point is they're both in the scriptures, and neither one of them are condemned for their efforts. They looked at things differently, but they worked towards the same goal. And the scriptures condemn neither one. And that goes for us. There's people here who have different opinions than what I do on certain things. But we work together for the same goal. And that's what we're working towards, to get each other to the kingdom. We're working hard to help each other get into the kingdom. Even if you don't agree with every comment I make or every thought that I have, and I don't agree with every comment you have or every thought that you have, as long as we have the same goal, we're not going to be condemned as long as we work 100% to help each other get into the kingdom.
Brother David?
Brothers and sisters, we see in this consideration of Nehemiah and the mentioning of the scriptures as pertaining to Ezra, we see that God has said in the body, the members, as it has pleased Him. And that's an important aspect that we have to understand, is that our calling and election is of God. We've got to make sure that we are the instruments that can be useful in God's service. He knows what we're made of. We can see this by looking on polished stones. He sees our potential far clearer and far more perfectly than we could ever see it in this life. We may undergo severe trial to work off the rough edges to prosper by the polishing, by the scouring and cleansing. But our basic character has got to be is known of God, and He knows what we're capable of. The idea is for us to make sure that we're the kind of an individual that He can use. We should be striving to make us ourselves as best we can vessels unto honor, yielding to the behest, the will of the potter. For He is the potter, and we are the clay. He is the shepherd, we are but sheep. We must follow. But we see in these great individuals, in Ezra and in Nehemiah, men that were selected, just as doubtless Esther and Mordecai were selected, but selected because they manifested faith, faith that worked by love. Nehemiah was obviously a man who had cared, and cared long before he made the request before the king, for he had been in prayer and fasting and crying and strong tears because of his people, and the city of his fathers lay waste. He cared genuinely for their welfare, and because he did, God granted all his requests. He was a selfless man. When he could have taken of the people because of his position and power, as Brother Lynn brought out, he didn't. He worked shoulder to shoulder with him. And that's what men really respect, is a man that will bear up in responsibility, not doing more than he would ask of his workers. The workers, on the other hand, need to be to recognize this in their leader, and they need to be willing to work no matter what it takes to accomplish the goal. So there are many, many lessons for us to learn as individuals in the ecclesia, how we should live, how we should act, how we should frame our time and our lives, that we might emulate the good example of these men, but especially the good example of the Lord Jesus Christ, who is their antitype.
Well, Nehemiah probably spent a few years being the cupbearer and standing in the shadows of Artaxerxes, spent years patiently waiting for the opportune time to make his requests. And with the assistance of Yahweh, came up with the right time, as opposed to Ezra, who was just trying to dive right in and couldn't get the enthusiasm built. Brother Dave. Wrong Dave. Nope, back.
I'd like to thank Brother Lenny for the remarks he gave, and there's two things that he mentioned that I'd like to expand upon. The first was that he said he was a man of prayer, which he certainly was. Even when the king asked him, what did Nehemiah request? Nehemiah offered a quick prayer. The other thing that Brother Len remarked that was that his work and his approach to the rebuilding was completely selfless. So I think you have, in those two characteristics, you have the kernel of Nehemiah. He was totally selfless and totally God-centered. In being selfless, he was able to see where the Jews were oppressing each other. He was able to see dispassionately the issues at hand. We use this phrase, he has an axe to grind, or he or she didn't have an axe to grind, whatever. That Nehemiah had no axes to grind. He just wanted to do the work of Yahweh. That enabled him to see clearly, and in combining that wonderful characteristic with his dedication to serving God, we have a picture here then of someone who is, like Lenny said, compassionate, godly, and at the same time totally uncompromising. And it just goes to show how it's possible to combine these characters. You tend to think perhaps sometimes that someone who's uncompromising is unloving. It's not necessarily the case. It shouldn't be the case. We can be, we can have compassion and love for our brethren while at the same time being completely uncompromising in the work of Yahweh. Nehemiah loved his nation. He loved the work of Yahweh and God's people. But when he saw them sin by marrying out to the truth or whatever it was, I don't think there's anyone here who would feel comfortable pulling anyone's hair out. But that was Nehemiah. So such was his zeal for serving Yahweh that he could see, as Lenny said, he had to stamp this out. And I think, in Nehemiah, he's not the only character in the scriptures, the Lord Jesus Christ being the greatest of them, but we do have a very good picture of how it's possible to combine uncompromising, total, let's call it extreme. Nehemiah was an extreme character. Let's not forget, let's not think that just because you've got all these Muslim radicals, that extremity is a bad thing. Nehemiah was extreme. He's about as extreme as you're going to get. But he was extreme in the right things. And the other thing which I think is important is that Nehemiah knew what was right. He submitted his prayers in faith to God, but it wasn't submitting prayers in faith to God that God would show him some new thing, how to handle the situation. Nehemiah generally knew what was what, where the things of the truth were concerned. His prayers to Yahweh were that, I know what to do here, please bless me and make sure that I'm doing the right thing. And I think there's a great exhortation in that as well. We can't go to God as a blank sheet, clueless of what we're supposed to do, and expect Him to show us everything. We have to do our own part to make sure that we know what's expected of us, what we should be doing, and then we can ask God to bless and guide us.
JP?
Brother Grocott mentions that the queen mentioned here may have been Esther. I was just wondering if any brethren had any comments on that. If she was Esther, if the queen mentioned in these two chapters.
Brother Dave? Did you have another comment?
I was just going to say that Nehemiah would not have appeared before the king without a firm and accurate plan in his mind beforehand. You wouldn't dare to approach a king who had absolute power over life and death over all of his subjects with a haphazard, foolish plan. The king must have been convinced. We know that journeys like this cost. He was making requests for men, material, and, you know, for protection from the service, the armed service. And so we know that he had to have planned things out as best he could. And what he couldn't, then it would be worked out between he and the king. But they asked how long would be his journey and when he would return. And so we know that they trusted him. So this is a large undertaking to rebuild a city. But it shows us when we come to God, we should not just come just without thought. We should come with reverence, realizing that God is reverent. Holy and reverent is His name. He alone is exalted, dwelling in light unapproachable. And no man has seen or can see, saving the Lord Jesus Christ. So when we come to God with prayer, when we make our petitions to God with prayer, in prayer, we must realize we're coming before the creator and sustainer of heaven and earth. He's the sole proprietor of heaven and earth. All things are His, and He's able to give us all that we need according to His will. But it's for us to draw near unto Him in truth. And our prayer should involve the needs of the brethren and sisters. We should pray for their safety, for their ultimate salvation. So let us keep these things in mind in light of His prayer and His approach unto the King.
Brother Philip?
Brother Justin asked a very interesting question regarding chapter 2 and verse 6, the queen also sitting by him. I don't really have an answer to Brother Justin. I'm just going to make a couple of comments in by way of thought provoking. And I think some of our more dedicated chronologists will be able to say yes or no ultimately to that question that Brother Justin has paused there. But yeah, it kind of is interesting because it almost throws it in the verse, you know, that the queen also sitting by him. It seems a strange comment for the Spirit to include there. And we do wonder what it does mean. You know, does it refer to Esther? And Brother Len, in his remarks, give us some of the overall chronological aspects of Ezra then. And the events of Esther and the book of Esther. So I think it's quite interesting that it could be. What we also understand is that when it says the queen, that the Hebrew there refers to a foreign queen. And I don't know whether anybody else can sort of expand on that. Apparently the only other occurrence of that word is in Psalm 45 and verse 9. Where it talks about the queen being arrayed in gold of Ophir, And the suggestion being there that that queen in Psalm 45, you know, the king's daughter is all glorious within. We get the picture of the great wedding of Christ and his bride. Well, we know that a lot of the bride will be made up of foreign attendants or foreign components, if I can put it that way, i.e. us, those of us who were alien from the Commonwealth of Israel. In a sense, the collective bride of Christ will be like a foreign queen in some degree. So it's kind of interesting that the word may sort of indicate that this queen was not a native Persian, that it was a foreign queen, which Esther would have been, being a Jewess. So it's kind of interesting that Brother Justin brought that to our attention for consideration.
Well, Brother Philip had brought up the comment about going and viewing the walls, and where do you start? It's sort of like when you get exposed to the truth. Where do you start to learn? And then you've got these people running interference, like Sanballat, laughing at you, saying, "Ha ha, what are you trying to do?" But Nehemiah just kept his faith, and he needed to get the work done. And that's exactly what we need to do in the truth. Brother Burrow?
On the thing about Esther, Brother Roberts published in the back of the Christadelphian a monthly Sunday school, kind of like a verse-by-verse comment or a verse comment on the Sunday school notes. And it was done by a Brother Bauer. And Brother Bauer suggested that it was Esther in the timing that if she had been on the throne for 12 years, that she was married to Xerxes, and he quotes the Septuagint, the Apocrypha, Josephus, Pride Now, Hales, Tomlin, and Gray as sources for his information. So as far as the timing, apparently there's a lot more people out there than just Christadelphians who feel it was Esther on the throne at the time. So it adds a little bit more support, even though it's a worldly support. At least Brother Roberts, by publishing it, to my mind, condoned the idea that it was Esther on the throne. So it adds a little bit more support to what Brother Philip was saying.
I can't see who that is. Sorry. Vernon.
I think, believe that 70 weeks until the Messiah, the Prince, would be crucified started at the time this decree started, when the king Artaxerxes let Nehemiah go back to Jerusalem to rebuild the wall. And I think it would come out exactly as 490 years from that decree till Christ was crucified. The other brethren might have some more on that.
Brother David?
I think, I'm not much of a chronologist, but I think this is the fourth decree of Ramhorn Dynasty. In the 20th of Artaxerxes, that's the decree that began the 490 years of Daniel. As Brother Vernon mentions, it works out exactly to the very day. Jesus was crucified at the expiration of that 70th week. John the Immerser, the Baptist, spoke the first half of the week, first 3.5 years. In that last half of the 70th year, Jesus fulfilled his ministry and died exactly within that 6-hour period. He was crucified at 9 died at six. Died at six. And we know that darkness was on the land from noon until three. So it should help us to listen to an exhortation on the way down here on the apocalypse and the timelines and the fact that the continuous historic view is the only right and reasonable view. And apart from that view, when people get away from that, they do debauchery to all the scriptures. They separate themselves from the truth as it is in Jesus and of the knowledge that it has pleased God to give us through Christ, through his angel, who sent and signified it. So we have to keep these things in mind and realize we're dealing with the divine. God raised up Ezra at just such a time. If this was Esther that was on the throne, who knows whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this. All things are known of God. In land passes, we've been studying the ways of providence. You can certainly see the hand of providence in these events, for they were the outworking of things that would restore Judah and prepare the foundation for the reception of Christ in that 70th week.
I'd like to thank all the brothers for their comments.